Radio Prague News.
Prague is planning a provisional budget for 2016. The state is to restitute the chateau in Kroměříž to the Czech Roman Catholic Church. And holder Petra Kvitová is again in the running for Czech Sportsperson of the Year. Prague has begun plans for a provisional budget for 2016. Councillors rejected a planned budget due to instability caused by the recent collapse of the city government. The provisional budget will be agreed monthly and correspond to a 12th of the budget for this year. The city also began 2015 with a provisional budget. Talks are continuing between the parties with seats on the council after a coalition of ANO, the Social Democrats and the Three Coalition split last month. The Czech state is to hand the chateau in Kroměříž in Moravia back to the Roman Catholic Church under restitution legislation. Under a deal signed on Tuesday, part of the property will be returned later this week, while a broader agreement on handing the chateau back will be signed by the National Heritage Institute and the Archbishop of Olomouc next year. The state is gradually returning assets valued at 75 billion crowns to church groups. More than 60 billion crowns in financial compensation will go to the churches over a 30-year period in lieu of properties not being paid back. State officials will be required to make their CVs public under a new government anti-corruption strategy presented by the Minister for Human Rights and Legislation, Jiří Dienstbier, on Tuesday. The plan is aimed at increasing transparency in the state administration, the minister told reporters. Officials from the level of head of department up will be required to make their work and educational backgrounds public. Mr. Dienstbier said the cabinet would also work on other anti-corruption measures that had got stuck in the legislative process, including a registry of contracts and laws on political parties and public tenders. The singer Karel Gott returned to hospital on Sunday to continue treatment for cancer, a spokesperson said. On Saturday, the 76-year-old appeared at the Czech Nightingale Music Awards, where he took the top prize for the 40th time. The tabloid Blesk reported that the veteran star was set to undergo a second course of chemotherapy for cancer of the lymph nodes. Mr. Gott has sold more than 50 million records, with his biggest success coming in the German-speaking countries. The Czech president, Miloš Zeman, supports a decision by Germany's cabinet to provide military support in the fight against Islamic State militants in Syria. The Berlin government wants to send a force of 1,200 soldiers to the region. Speaking via his spokesman, Mr. Zeman said it was only a good thing if countries decided to fight Islamic State. The president called for joint international action against Islamic State in a speech to the UN General Assembly in September. Five men and five women are in the running for the Czech Sportsperson of the Year award. The finalists include the holder, tennis player Petra Kvitová, and three-time winner Martina Sablíková, who is a speed skater. The other contenders are Zuzana Hejnová, hurdles, Jaromír Jágr, ice hockey, Andrej Maravec, biathlon, Jiří Prskavec, water slalom, Gabriela Sokolová, biathlon, Andrej Sinek, rowing, Lucia Ševašová, tennis, and Zdeněk Štybar, cycling. And Viktoria Plzeň ventured the winter break in Czech soccer's top flight as league leaders after beating Jablonec 1-0 on Monday evening. That result meant they could not be overtaken by reigning champion Sparta Prague, who came from behind to overcome Brno 2-1. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, police sting is likely to make crooked cabbies think twice about ripping off customers, and police officers returning to the old border checkpoints of the pre-Schengen era find they have no base from which to operate. Later on in the program, we look at an experimental project by architecture students from Prague and Bratislava who created a so-called parallel membrane city. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Journalist Janek Rubež has long reported on crooked cabbies in Prague who overcharge visiting tourists many times the regular amount. Taking an apparent cue from the internet program Prague vs. Crooks, the police conducted an operation which has now seen 7 people, 6 taxi drivers and a former civil servant at City Hall arrested. The gathering of evidence took months and the cornerstone was testimony from tourists themselves. Earlier, Jan Wellinger spoke to Janek Rubež asking how he saw the developments.
It definitely is not easy, and for the police it wasn't easy to collect all the evidence because what they needed was to follow the taxi drivers long enough so they could gather enough evidence to get their overcharging over 5,000 crowns, because that's the limit for a criminal offense or, you know, felony that they can actually arrest them. And I'm happy they succeeded.
Essentially, dozens of officers were involved in following the taxi drivers. And one aspect that is unusual about this case is that they used or involved foreigners themselves using the taxi, who then were willing to testify before a judge before they left the Czech Republic. How unusual is that aspect as a tactic?
We actually filmed the same situation almost a year ago. The way it works is that the city officials follow the cab, let's say, to the airport. And then when the person leaves the cab, they go to whoever the person is, to the tourist, and they ask him, how much did you pay? And if they've been overcharged, they already have a judge and an interpreter at the place, at the airport, so they can immediately, you know, do all the paperwork they need, that then they can press charges against the taxi driver. So I wouldn't say it's that unusual. Maybe it's unusual in this amount that they've done it as of right now.
What does this case change? What kind of impact do you think it will have? Because it seems until now, taxi drivers, despite regulations, despite past improvements, they've always found a way to easily overcharge foreigners when they need to. So what do you think this will change?
It will change the way taxi drivers will now look at journalists like myself. They will actually see that it can end in serious damage to them. It can actually hurt them. The group that we've been watching on Old Town Square is only one of so many groups that there are around Prague. The same situation that we filmed in Old Town Square in Pažiska Street, exactly the same thing is going on at the main train station in Dlouhá Street, Náměstí Republiky, and so on and so on. I mean, we can follow these people for years. The thing that will change is that these guys will turn over their shoulder more often, and they will be more worried every time they overcharge. They will think in their head, this may be a cop going after me, or this may be, you know, a journalist with a camera going after me. So I better not do it again.
Journalist Janek Rubež talking there to my colleague Jan Wellinger. As the Czech Republic tightens border security in connection with the migrant crisis, police officers are returning to the old border checkpoints of the pre-Schengen era. However, many of the buildings are now in private ownership and they find they have no base from which to operate. Daniela Lazarová has the details.
When the Czech Republic entered the Schengen zone on December 21st of 2007, officials hailed it as the start of a new era. Border checks were abolished overnight, and no one considered the possibility of the country one day having to renew controls. The buildings serving police and customs officers at checkpoints stood empty for months and even years, but the vast majority were eventually sold. Those that were in keynotes and presented more lucrative buys were sold on condition that they would not be resold for a period of 10 years and would be leased back to the state at any time in the event of need. Those which proved much harder to sell because of their condition or isolated location were sold with no strings attached. As a result, officers now deployed at certain border crossings are on duty around the clock, working from tents, their cars, or at best prefabricated containers with no electricity or running water. Spokesman for the South Bohemian Police, Miroslav Dobek, says the police presence at the border has gradually intensified, regardless of the work conditions.
We constantly monitor all crossing points along our stretch of the border, and we deploy officers according to the information received in order to maintain a high level of control.
Although the Czech Republic is not on the main migrant route to Western Europe, from the start of this crisis, the country has maintained heightened control of its borders, and the present situation does not indicate an imminent change of policy. Indeed, the Interior Ministry has said it is ready to cooperate with the Army in stepping up border security should the need arise. And earlier this year, police officers and soldiers took part in a joint training session, working together to effectively close a section of the border for 12 hours. While Czech officials are still pushing hard for the EU to introduce joint patrols at Schengen's outer borders and thus preserve the Schengen open space, speculation regarding the possibility of a small Schengen comprising of a few select states and unilateral measures undertaken by individual EU member states to secure their borders paint an uncertain future. And with the winter months coming, the authorities are working to meet the basic needs of officers deployed along the border, albeit in the form of mobile power generators, toilets, and deliveries of bottled water. Even if the worst-case scenario is avoided and effective controls of the outer Schengen border allow non-buffer states to relax their vigilance, it will take time for the situation to return to normal.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. A new exhibition currently on display at Prague's Center for Contemporary Art presents an experimental project by architecture students from Prague and Bratislava who created a so-called parallel membrane city. Urbo Kune, which means a common city in Esperanto, was designed for an old quarry in Prague's Zbraslav. The laid-out model of the utopian city can be seen at docks until mid-January. I spoke to architect Martin Stoss, one of the authors of the project, and I first asked him about the initial idea behind Urbo Kune.
I think I should start from the founder. It's Jan Tabor, who is Austrian architect and theorist of architecture, and a couple of years ago he came with the maybe provocative and idealistic idea that the EU should have some common or united city, or how to call it. And he thought it shouldn't be any existing city like Brussels nowadays. He also thought that it shouldn't only be a center of politics, it should also be a center of the arts. He invited Czech architect Petr Hájek, who is my colleague, and he was currently working on another project here in Prague, and he thought it could be placed in here.
So it was Petr Hájek who chose the location
for the place?
Yeah, exactly.
Petr Hájek, he's teacher in Prague at the Technical University and also in Bratislava at the Academy of Fine Arts, and he was with his students designing a new city into a former quarry close to Prague on the river banks of the river Vltava. And he thought that could be a nice place for it because the old quarry is basically, it's some problem in the landscape. And maybe when we give some new program for that place, which is a bit destroyed, we could somehow improve it.
Before talking about the exact design for the old Zbraslav quarry, I'd still like to return to Jan Tabor and to his idea of the common city, which is what this term Urbo Kune actually means. Mm-hmm. I think it's from Esperanto.
Yeah, it's from this artificial language Esperanto. Jan Tabor took this language and said maybe it could be used in the common city because it's so artificial and it doesn't depend to anyone. Jan Tabor thought maybe we don't have to design a city based on some regulations, based on some restrictions. Maybe we can design it based on some agreements which all of the members of the group understand. So we doesn't have specified design, we have just some cluster, some structure which we can fill how we want.
You are also calling it a membrane city. What does the word membrane refer to?
Maybe I should explain how the city looks like. The old quarry is basically a big hole because the quarry is placed on a sloped side. It's a huge hole, like 2 kilometers long and 500 meters wide. And it's hard to build there something. And Peter, when he was thinking how to do it, he just divided the whole area with long walls, which are like placed 11 meters from each other. And these walls define the spaces in between of them. And these spaces could be filled with whatever you can imagine, with all of the functions you need.
So basically it's divided into different slots.
Yeah.
And each slot sort of serves a different purpose.
Exactly. And from a distance it looks like a huge ridge or huge membrane cluster. You can see many membranes placed side by side.
Also, what strikes me is that it's not really built sort of horizontally as you would imagine a city is built, but rather sort of vertically. Yeah.
The verticality comes from the reason that we wanted to repair the landscape. So the walls has the shape of the former landscape, which was there 100 years ago before the quarrying started. So there are huge, tall walls, and the city has to be vertical, because the walls are vertical. It looks like it's something not usual, but the structures in between of the walls are quite normal.
When you designed this city, each student had his or her own slot, and there are like residential neighborhoods and gardens and mm-hmm. shopping centers. It's quite amazing. You can find a skate park and a huge aquarium. Can you tell me more about the different designs? At least some of them, of course. You can't mention all of them.
As you said, each student got one slot. Slots are really different. The shortest one is like 20 meters long, and the longest one is 500 meters long. And basically, there has to be all of the functions which normal city needs. So there are shops, there's shopping mall, there's swimming pool or spa. There is hotel, there is a brewery or factory, and so on and so on. And interesting is that you can't get through the membranes, through the walls. You have to go around the whole city. And to get to another membrane, to another slot, you need to use a small train, which is really fast.
Why did you decide to design this utopian city? What does it bring to the students? Are they going to use some of the skills that they learned in this project when they design real buildings in real life?
For us, it's some idea which we wanted to prove, to test. And we think for students it's the same. It's to test their skills and to develop their skills. It's like a test wall for firemen. They have a really weird space, which is not usual, and on which they have to think twice or a couple of times more than if they design normal proper house. They can't just copy some plan of an existing house. They have to really think about it, since it's really narrow space and it's tall and so on. So when they are working on that, they learn much more than if they are working on a normal house.
The city that you designed, it was a source of inspiration for other artists as well. The novelist Miloš Urban recently published a book called Urbokune, which is based on your design. And you told me at the beginning that there was an interesting interaction between him and the architects.
Miloš Urban is friend of Petr Hájek, so they were some 2 years ago sitting at the pub and speaking, and they were discussing maybe they can somehow spread the idea of Urbokune, and they thought it would be nice to connect somehow architecture and literature. They thought they should somehow interact and see what happens. So Miloš Urban started to write a book based on the design of the membrane city, and he plays there a story, and he needed to have there some library, but the library wasn't there, so he has invented the library by himself. He described the library in the book. He said it will be a really huge library for 15 million people. And when we read the book, we saw, yeah, that's a nice idea, there is no library, and maybe we should visualize and make the library really into pictures. So we did it. And now when you read the book, you can see the library in there as an illustration.
You can also see the laid-out model of the membrane city because it is currently on display at the Center for Contemporary Art at DOCS. The exhibition also includes paintings inspired by the project.
That's another person who took part in the whole project. It's Pavel Root, who is graphic designer, and he made design of the book. And he was so much inspired by the city when he was working on it that he made several paintings which has inspiration in several slots. So, for instance, he took the monastery and he made a painting which is inspired by monastery.
As far as I know, the model has already been exhibited elsewhere in the world before coming to DOCS. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It was already in Bratislava last year, in the gallery of the Academy of Fine Arts. It was in Litomyšl, exhibited at the castle, and it was also in Vienna. And it's also going next year to Tokyo.
And what are your further plans with the project? Will the project develop any further?
Sure, but we don't know how. It's kind of opened project. There are people coming and joining the group. We will see and we hope it will go somewhere.
Architect Martin Stoss talking about the Urbo Kune project, which is currently exhibited at Prague's Center for Contemporary Arts. And that edition of In Focus brings us to the end of our English language broadcast. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franjková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.